That's better if people can hear. It's also, we've had some deaths caused by this, and fortunately we have a representative who actually is in the recycling business and understands this, so he's worked hard. He had a lot of knowledge and then worked with other people in the field that he knew, and prepared a quite lengthy bill. And the way we're going to treat this, there's two bills. I have one which just deals with the criminal aspects. He has a very thorough bill on how we can really get at the problem in many ways. And so I am, Representative Gardner, do you want to come to the table? And then it's my understanding that you want to send it to local government, is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. This actually will probably have a couple of stops because it cuts across a few different disciplines, but because of a potential for local cities to deal with local regulation, that local government would be the next stop.
Okay. So I will, what we're going to do, there's a delete all for that, and I will move Bill 457, and I'll also move the delete all amendment A070019, and then at the same time, what we're going to do is take joint testimony on these two bills. I'll also move my own bill 584 and the delete everything DE3, and I'll explain just briefly how these two work together. Representative Gardner has a very thorough way to get at this, how to stop the problems, how to deal with setting up requirements of dealers, which will get at people that are trying to peddle this stuff. And then in his latest version, he also added criminal penalties for doing that. And I had various criminal penalties in my bill for doing that. And I'm going to take out all of those in my delete all, except for the one which makes it when there is a substantial risk of death or bodily harm caused. I think it's very important. We have people that are, especially civil servants, that have to go into these properties, whether they're fire, police, inspectors, things like that, and I don't think it's right to endanger them and just have a minimal felony on that when their lives are being endangered. So with that explanation of how these two bills interact, Representative Gardner, would you go ahead and present the bills and the problems and your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Representative Gardner from Shoreview in Ramsey County. For the last 9 years, up until I started in the legislature, I was the director for the Recycling Association of Minnesota, position from which I've since stepped down. But on a daily basis, I would receive news clips by email from just about every newspaper in the state that had a website that had the word recycling in it. And about 18 months ago, there was a blip on our radar screen that something was going on with metals. Because of increasing global demand for basic commodities, everything from petroleum to paper to plastic to copper, we saw the increase in the price of copper in particular triple and quadruple about where it had been. And this also happened at the same time that pseudoephedrine was harder to get for people who are cooking methamphetamine in rural areas in particular. And they were looking to buy that product, and a quick source of cash for them turned out to be scrap metal. Although I've discovered that the theft of metal in other places, particularly in the Twin Cities metro area, isn't necessarily drug-related. However, after about another 6 months, I started to have police officers call me and saying, this seems to be happening more and more with people stealing wire out of homes, copper piping out of homes, utilities having spools of copper wire stolen. And it's really getting annoying. Is this a trend? And I said, yes, it's happening all over the state. About 6 months ago, we started to see this issue become not just an annoyance but an epidemic. And some of the testifiers today are going to talk to you about some of the acute public safety problems related to the theft of metal. In particular, organized gangs of people are going into abandoned homes, knocking out the drywall with sledgehammers, ripping out copper wire, removing copper pipes from gas connections leading to gas leakage, and in the case of four homes in Minneapolis, actual explosion. And if you saw the news last night, there was actually a house that was blown off its foundations because of this problem. I also come from the recycling industry, so I regret that it has become a necessity to place greater rules on an industry which is near and dear to my heart. And yet there are people represented here today who have had family-owned businesses in the same family for more than a century, who have been doing all the best practices that the Institute for Scrap Recycling Industries has recommended to them. Some of the things that are in this bill are included in those best practices, but there are a lot of businesses out there in the state that are not doing this kind of thing. And it's leading to criminals finding ready outlets for materials such as copper, wiring, tubing, and piping in order to gain some cash. There are eight major components to this bill, and I'll try and flag the ones that are probably likely to draw the attention of the scrap industry that might be somewhat controversial, and there are some licensing parts which I think the law enforcement might like to be a little tougher, and I'm waiting to see how that might play out. The first of the things that I'm proposing in this bill would be increased record-keeping requirements for scrap metal recyclers. That includes recording, viewing and recording a picture ID, recording a license number. I didn't think that was necessary, but the police told me that people are coming in with stolen vehicles, and I've seen a list just on Friday of stolen vehicles that have been used to facilitate these crimes. Also requiring the use of video cameras at scrap recycling dealers. I also was not really crazy about that idea, but it turns out people are not only coming in stolen vehicles, but bicycles to scrap yards bringing materials. One of the best practices suggested by the Institute for Scrap Recycling Industries is that payments to sellers of scrap metal the scrap metal dealer should pay by check rather than cash, and law enforcement tells me that this is one way to actually that they've actually been able to catch some people. I'm also recommending a state registration, which would be very modest for the Department of Public Safety. This actually would be a two-way street, so not only would law enforcement have a list of who the registered scrap recyclers are, but they would also be able to send out alerts should law enforcement find out that there's a particular theft from a utility, for example, and they can get the word out right away that they're looking for this kind of material. A provision that was added here was the ability for local governments to have the option of having additional regulation should they choose to have licensure for these businesses in their political jurisdiction. And I'm going to be talking with law enforcement later this week about whether that's going to work for them or not. It was going to add another layer of stuff there, so I did not include a requirement there. There are criminal penalties listed for stealing this kind of material and knowingly buying this kind of stolen property. You may hear from some of the utilities today that about the final provisions in the bill, which has to deal with penalties for damage or theft to energy transmission equipment. We're seeing damage to our critical energy infrastructure in the state. Next would be a tax incentive for scrap metal recyclers to actually buy a video surveillance system, and also to be able to license into the automated pawn system. The city of Minneapolis has some proprietary software which can be licensed out for a modest fee on a monthly basis. It can be used by other law enforcement agencies as well as people who are on the lookout for this kind of material, so that you can have in real time data about material that's being sold to scrap recyclers. And the folks who operate this automated pawn system tell me that it has been very effective in a timely and efficient recovery of an increasing amount of property. But I understand it comes with a price, and therefore that's why the tax incentive would be there. We're asking for at least a weekly sharing of data with law enforcement. If you use an electronic system, that would be facilitated in more or less real time, or whenever you submit the data electronically, which could be at least once every day. The final component that I think one of my recycling colleagues will point out maybe a problem is a tag and hold requirement. And this is similar to what's done in pawn shops, where scrap metal you might buy from somebody off the street, you would have to set aside. And as the data on what you're buying goes to law enforcement, you would have to hang on to that material and not sell it again to a bulk purchaser for 5 days if you have an electronic property management system, or 10 days if you use a manual system. And having worked in recycling, I know that space is always at a premium. A lot of these recyclers deal with vehicles in particular, and you just can't leave them lying around. So I'm certainly willing to work with the scrap recyclers and finding something that works with their logistical system. And we may need to just target one type of metal. I thought this was going to be a nice little bill for a freshman member with experience in the recycling industry. And I was interviewed on public radio when I was still doing my recycling job in late December, saying that when I get in, this is one bill I'd like to pursue. And then my phone started ringing, and builders, the aggregate and ready-mix folks, electrical contractors, law enforcement, utilities all started contacting me and saying, this is a huge problem for us. And the private sector in particular is suffering considerable financial loss and increased cost due to uncertainty because of material getting stolen and costly construction delays being taking place. So while I regret the necessity of having to place new regulation on the business that I'm closely affiliated with, there are many other people in our economy in the private sector who are relieved that this bill is coming forward, and I think some of them are going to speak to the merits of that bill. I think I'll stop there. People told me that brevity is a virtue. And I'd be happy to stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Do you want to proceed to your... do you want to, at this point, do you have a question? Representative Felsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With pawn shops, communities are able to charge a licensing fee to cover the cost of processing that data. Would that be something that they'd be able to do as this moves forward, or is that something you're open to later on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hellstrom, I'm open to that. I've been told by some folks in law enforcement who work with this automated pawn system that there are ways to make it relatively financially painless to integrate into that system, and I have yet to work that out. I will say, too, that this automated pawn system, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but it is being used by some jurisdictions in western Wisconsin. So we recognize that people are thieves are finding the soft place where they can take stuff, and we certainly don't want it go across the border. Does that sound right?
Representative Felsen, that's why we're sending it to your committee.
Yes, we knew that we'll have to stop, and
you get to have that problem.
Would it be helpful, Mr. Chair, to have the testifiers just talk about the particular impacts in a brief and concise way, and then be happy to take more questions?
Representative Gardner, that was the next thing I was going to do, is ask if you wanted to bring down your presenter or your witnesses.
Good afternoon, Chairman Mullery and members of the committee. My name is Doug Holton, and I'm the fire chief here in St. Paul. I'm speaking in support of both of these bills dealing with the theft of copper pipes and wiring from buildings. Since November 22nd of 2006, my fire crews have responded to 6 incidents of smell of natural gas coming from buildings. In every case, the natural gas was leaking from the pipes as a result of the theft of copper pipes. In several of these incidents, the gas was at an explosive level. These situations are extremely dangerous for the safety of my fire crews. If an explosion were to occur when firefighters are on the scene, there's a potential for serious injury and possible death. In my 29 years of experience in the fire service, I have not seen a more dangerous phenomenon that poses such a serious threat and a consistent threat to the safety of firefighters and citizens as the one we are facing right now. I strongly encourage your support on the passage of this bill. Our community needs it, and my firefighters need it also. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Holton. Do you want to... Is there any questions for Chief Holton? Can we go to the next witness? What we're going to do is have Mr. Deegan was going to testify on mine, but since they're all combined and it's interplay between the two, I think we'll have all the witnesses now. So, Mr. Deegan, do you want to go ahead?
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Deegan. I'm the manager of the Problem Property Unit in the city of Minneapolis. And the scope of our duties is to deal with vacant and boarded buildings and those rental properties primarily that are major concerns to the citizens of the city of Minneapolis. Prior to this position, I spent 30 years with Minneapolis Fire, so I can appreciate the comments that the chief spoke to from St. Paul. What I'd like to do is talk about the safety and health and livability, which are our core mission in regulatory services, and I've got three examples of properties that we've had some issues with. We have many in the city of Minneapolis, but I'll just, as the chief was pointing out, okay, this particular property is at 3407 Fremont Avenue North. What I can't say today conclusively is if the copper pipe had been stripped out at the time of the fire or in close proximity to it. One of the things that we're seeing in our city is that a lot of these vacant houses, while they're in the redemption period, criminals break into them, strip the copper out, do whatever with it, and then subsequently we get some type of fire in it. Sometimes there are some fires, sometimes they're unfounded. As an example here, you can see here, this is the copper gas supply that was to the stove that was cut out. Here's an example of the copper pipe at the hot water heater in the basement that was cut out. And then these are examples of the overhaul that was done by the firefighters in the basement area as a result of the fire that was either incidental or whatnot to this particular thing. This is a picture of one of the sink areas where the copper has been stripped out. And these are some additional pictures of the structural damage as a result of the fire. As I mentioned, many of these properties are in the foreclosure process at times. So the mortgagors, they're not in possession of this yet. So there's a significant amount of monetary damage to the structure and obviously to the affordability concerns that we have in the city of Minneapolis. Had this not been precipitated by the stripping of the copper pipe, we very well may have had a property that people could have rehab, moved back into. But as you can see with these pictures, there's a significant amount of damage to this particular structure, which in all likelihood is going to end up with a demolition by my staff. So that's one of them.
Mr. Deegan? That one's in my district. I go by about four blocks from it every day. So I'm very aware of the problem that's occurring with these foreclosed houses.
And Mr. Chair, I was just going to point out that this is not just a Minneapolis or St. Paul problem. This problem originated in greater Minnesota and has spread. And I live in the suburbs, and Hugo was
the new house.
Several places that have been affected.
So as you can see from these pictures, this is a terrible situation in this particular house. Now, this next address, and to illustrate the point of Chief Holton, this property was at 3500 North 4th Street in Minneapolis.
Another
which
one
is
in
also
district.
In your district.
Is there one outside?
And this was one where the somebody in the neighborhood smelt gas, called it into 911, the fire department responds, and obviously it resulted in an explosion. So the public life safety hazards up to the community obviously are of major concern. In this particular incident, nobody was injured, fortunately. And obviously, if it happened during the daytime, that might have led to that. But this was a issue where it was caused by a copper pipe theft. We do have that documented. And these are obviously the after effect with the demolition. And I might add here that when we have cases like this, first off, we've eliminated this affordable housing issue out of our market area, which is a vital concern of us. Then we have the public safety issue. And then we have the cost. We spent $19,000 and some dollars to have this building demoed. That's taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis that have to pay for that. We assess the property, and we may or may not get that money back in the future.
Mr. Deegan, did you say that was 3,500 North 4th?
That's correct.
There's a blind couple lives about three houses from there that walk by there. If that could have been dangerous to them.
Very much so. And this is at the northeast corner of that intersection, mm-hmm. if I recollect that one correctly. And the last one I want to show you is the address of this property is 1931 Morgan Avenue North. And here's an example of you have some folks that have invested in the community, and they bought this property for around $200,000. And once they took possession of it, or in that period of time, it was vacant, somebody broke in, stripped the copper out, and in this particular case, they left the water on. So when our inspectors got out there, the basement was full of water. So the pictures really don't tell the total tale. You can see here, for example, the piping removed from the hot water heater. This particular one is where they cut and took the water meter itself, which is why we had free-flowing water in it. So here you got a building that's got about 7 to 8 feet full of water in the basement, and just the structural integrity that's compromised. And again, fire department response to this, it's an unknown. They enter the building, so there's some life safety issues that we're concerned about there. And lastly, what I'd like to say is, as Mr. Gardner pointed out, approximately 18 months ago, we started meeting with our counterparts in the city of Minneapolis, the fire department, the police department, and especially Xcel Energy. So we have a data system that we exchange. The gas company records it. They send that Xcel spreadsheet to me, and then I've got to look at ours and kind of try to compare notes. The long and short of it is we've got probably about 100 of these right now in Minneapolis alone. So it's a major problem for us.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Deegan or Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Chair Mallory. How much weight in copper typically can a person secure from one of these homes? Any idea?
I don't know the answer in terms of weight. What I've been told is an actual house like the ones that I've been showing you averages about $300 in value at the scrapyard. I don't know what that poundage would be.
Maybe 100 pounds.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Deegan. Mr. Zickman.
Mr. Chair, members, Niall Zickman representing today Minnesota Fire Chiefs, Minnesota Fire Department Association, and the Fire Marshal Association of Minnesota, just putting on the record that all three of those associations support and urge passage of this bill. I would just share a short personal story. I'm the chief of Spring Lake Park Lane Mousy Fire Department. We recently completed construction of a new fire station, and to the cost of that was added $20,000 approximately for additional security and on-site vault storage for all the copper, primarily the copper piping and the plumbing, because of the concerns and fears of having that stolen. So it's a urban, suburban, rural, metro problem. It's not just the old homes, the brand new construction. We really had to move vaults on site that had real intense security systems on them, and then they still had to hire security staff from 4 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock the next morning just to protect the copper. So thank you, members.
Is there any questions for Mr. Zickman? Thank you, Mr. Zickman. Do you have any other witnesses? Would you state your name for the record?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Don Bry. I represent Aggregate Industries and the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association. Wanted to bring you just a view. We operate all over the state of Minnesota. We have 40 ready mix facilities and aggregate facilities across the state. I thought I'd share with you just a few of the issues. I'm definitely here in support of this bill. I think it's very critical and important. A year and a half ago, we have a barge fleet. We operate on the Mississippi River, and my towboat was in dry dock. And we come in on a Monday morning, and the propellers were stolen off our towboat. They're stainless steel. They're 5 feet in diameter, and I have to go search the junkyards, to the scrap yards, to find my propellers, and I had to pay $1,000 to get them back. And they were $50,000 propellers, so it was a good deal. I just didn't really think I should have to buy them twice. Last summer, as copper prices went up, we have conveyors that run from one end of our operation to the other to bring the aggregate up to our processing facilities. And it was not uncommon on a Monday morning to find 5,000 to 10,000 feet of copper cut out of our conveyors, which are the control wires and the control circuits. And we were to the point of having to hire private security. The Apple Valley Police were very helpful. And this happened to us, and it actually rotated between three different producers down in Apple Valley. The other thing, and it's tough for us because our industry has rock crushers, and we have big brass bushings that make the machines operate. Well, a bushing like that's $10,000. Well, they have a scrap value of about $500. And so we'll keep them on shelves in our warehouse and come in the morning and they'll be gone. And then we go to the scrap yards and we buy them back. And this bill, I think, would bring some accountability to a system that doesn't work well. And so I just I ask you for your support, and I thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Vry. Are there any questions for Mr. Vry? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Come on.
Mr. Chair, other committee members, I am Inspector Bob Scarmer. I'm the commander of the 2nd Precinct at Minneapolis Police Department. And to give you a little history on my involvement here, at one time I was the interim inspector at the 4th Precinct, where I had the pleasure of meeting the chair at some neighborhood meetings. And about 4 years ago, I started to notice many of our vacant buildings being burglarized, and the only loss was the copper pipe and the wiring out of the house. And as we were stating earlier, maybe to get $300 total out of a house, but as Tom Deegan said, the amount of damage that they create in that house is horrendous. And I really believe it's really hurting the city in that developers and insurance rates may rise because there may have a tendency not to insure people come in who want to either do new construction or renovation in the city of Minneapolis, because so often the burglaries are being done on renovated houses, and contractors come in, put their merchandise or their wire and their copper tubing in the house, and they come the next day and it's gone. And I moved on from that job down to Minneapolis Police Licensing. Now I'm the commander of the 2nd Precinct, and the problem has gotten even worse in the last 4 years. And I first noticed it in, we're fortunate enough in the east side of Minneapolis to have a renovation yard for old railroad cars. And during the renovation, they have to power those cars up. And they run electrical cabling to those cars to power them up. And they were losing 500 pounds of this cabling on a fairly regular basis. And I had enough concern that I went out and saw the people, and they said, "This isn't the first time. This is probably 6 or 7 times that we've lost this." And these people are involved in maintaining our history. And their business is being destroyed by people stealing the cabling that they need to renovate old railroad cars. And then it even became a greater concern of mine, and I won't name the business, but individuals entered the service tunnel supplying one of our utilities and attempted to cut through and mistakenly tried to cut through cabling that actually was live. And what happened is there was an electrical explosion underground, and this person, lucky they escaped with their life, even though we haven't caught the person, when our officers entered that tunnel, they found the portable sawzall and the other equipment that this individual was using to cut this huge cabling. Now, this isn't a person walking through the alley and deciding to burglarize a house and steal. This is a professional criminal who's going in for the most return for his effort. That really caused a concern of mine, and I called a representative of that utility and talked to them, and that individual informed me on an unnamed hospital, I won't name it here, was actually shut down because somebody entered a service tunnel to that hospital, cut through the power supply to that hospital, and actually forced the entire hospital to go on emergency power. That's something. This is big life and safety issues. Not only do our firefighters who are brave on their own just going in have to face this added risk. To go on a step further, I've talked to my investigators at the precinct because I really became concerned about what can we do about this. And the lack of regulation at the salvage yards have really hampered us. And to give you an idea, even sometimes we're successful in locating the loss, but the holding period has a significant effect on that. We found that some of our larger utilities have had whole spools of wire stolen. And we've located, but now it's a 1 foot length, so already cut up by the scrapyard, and a $20,000 roll of cabling, electrical cabling, is actually worthless to the victim. And now it's become actually what it's being sold for is scrap. It's a huge problem in Minneapolis, and you cannot, if we dry up statewide, the professional crook being able to go to a salvage yard and sell the stuff, we'd have a significant effect, not only in the burglaries throughout, especially Minneapolis, because that's my concern, what I know about, but we'll cut down on the burglaries, I believe, statewide, where they're going in for copper because they won't have a legitimate way to sell those items at a recycling center or scrap metal scrapyard. So, any questions?
Are there any questions for Commander Scamra? Representative Saylor.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, I just wonder, do you have any facts on how this is also affecting, you know, rural Minnesota? And also, I'm concerned about when they come in with a spool, how much, you know, and maybe this would be to Representative Gardner or to someone else, but do we know how much of the material that has been stolen in the form of a spool actually ends up in the form of a spool when it gets to the scrapyard, or has it been pre-processed with value added for that purpose? Do we know anything about that?
Through the chair to the representative, I don't think I can answer that question. I'm only aware of a couple incidents in Minneapolis, and because it was at my precinct, when I start bringing this up to the command staff of the department, I was tasked to work with Phil Havenstein from our APS system, who is a retired Minneapolis police lieutenant, to look at starting a city ordinance so we could get something in effect quickly, and with the ultimate goal of being here and asking for statewide regulation, because if it's stolen in Minneapolis and the outlets in Minneapolis dry up, the professionals are going to drive to Anoka County, Ramsey County, wherever, and sell it there. And so to isolate us as having a regulation, I don't think solves the problem for anybody. And I really applaud this initiative by Representative Gardner and yourself in going statewide with this.
Representative Coles, you have a question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, what are the states of Wisconsin, Iowa, South Dakota, and North Dakota doing regarding this issue? I hear what your witness is saying, but maybe instead of leaving the city of Minneapolis to go to Anoka, they're gonna drive a few miles further east into Wisconsin. I'm not sure that we're getting rid of the problem. It's different than the meth bill that we passed a couple of years ago, because there we were getting rid of the supply of the stuff that was causing the problem. Here you're trying to manipulate the market in Minnesota, but we can't make Wisconsin, Iowa, North Dakota, or South Dakota close down the market for sale here.
Well, Representative Coles, I don't think the answer is getting rid of the copper.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, the answer to the question, what are the other states doing, is they're watching what this committee and all the other subsequent committees are going to do with this bill. What I've learned about the automated pond system in the city of Minneapolis is that you don't necessarily need to worry about boundaries. And in fact, Mr. Evanstein from Minneapolis was telling me that they've been able to recover some pond material in western Wisconsin because jurisdictions have had access to
he's now down here
that stuff. And I know I talked to a station in Mankato today, and they're concerned about traffic into Iowa. I can tell you, vegan recycling, the transportation is a big chunk of your costs, and if you make it more difficult for people to drive 50, 100, 200 miles, you take a chunk out of the problem, too.
As Mr. Evanstein, I take it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Phil Havenstein with the Minneapolis Police Department. As Inspector Scammer said, I had the pleasure of being in uniform a little over 31 years, and came back in a civilian position. I now manage the automated pond system along with some other software programs that the city has developed. I am really pleased to be having this conversation here today, because it's long overdue. The issues of public safety, the issues of how do we address these concerns and how do we reach into our creative juices and come up with a solution is well demonstrated right here today. Representative Gardner's, Representative Mulry's approach, I applaud. Is it perfect? No. Will it get better as it goes through the committee process? I'm sure it will. And I think that part of this is the fact that we do need to control what we can control, and that is Minnesota. We can't control Wisconsin, we can't control Iowa, but we can control Minnesota in the sense of hardening the ability for the thieves to profit from their activities. My involvement in this came incidental to the automated pawn system, because I was approached about 4 months ago by a number of investigators from Washington, Ramsey County, Hennepin County, City of Minneapolis, actually all over the state, and said, you know, we need to have a better way of collecting information, we need a better way of sharing this information, and we've already got it, why don't you use the pawn system for that? And I said, there's no reason we can't, but we need to have some authority to do it by, and therefore we put our heads together and said, what else do we need? Well, we got all done. It was ironic that the very things that we had identified over a period of several meetings with industry, including trade associations, contractors, utility companies, law enforcement, fire departments, just about paralleled the list of recommendations from the scrap metal industry's own groups, saying you do need to have good identification, positive photo identification, pictures of the cars, pictures of the people, good descriptions of the property. All the things that we were talking about, they were already being recommended by their own trade associations to the dealers. So we find ourselves not at odds, but in fact in concert with the efforts of the industry to try and police itself and leave itself less vulnerable to the financial loss of having the police come in and say, that's stolen, I'm going to be taking it back from you. And this is stolen property, which is a common cause. Although you did hear that that the aggregate companies are buying their product several times, it sounds like, before they get a chance to actually use it. So my interest in this is sharing information. It is having good regulation. It is having effective regulation. One of the questions that was asked early on, is this something that can be revenue neutral to local cities? Absolutely. And in fact, it is a model that has been in place for over a decade in Minnesota with the pawn system. But what I would encourage you to do is that as it moves through the committees and to the local government committees, that you look at it in terms of as a requirement. There aren't a lot of scrap metal dealers in the state. I'm saying there's a lot, but not hundreds of them. And so not every community is going to be affected, but it's important that we all have the same level playing field and that the dealers have the same level playing field so that we don't create an unfair competitive advantage by not regulating one yard and strongly regulating another yard. So I would encourage you to think along those lines as well. Finally, I think that the important thing to me is that it is important that public safety be addressed and that we look out not just at the fire and the police issues, but the general public. Others could tell you the story recently where the gas line was cut, and only because I think that some miracle occurred. The people doing it using a silver saw, if you would, or actually a sawzall, they cut a chunk of pipe out in St. Paul. The gas started leaking, and the public called, not just one or two people, lots of people, because it was that strong. And that's what led to the discovery of this theft of a control box, maybe worth $20 at the junkyard. But the threat that it placed to the public, general public, was huge.
Any questions? Representative De La Forest, and then Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To that point, a question for the witness. You talked about the need to create a level playing field, and that was precisely Representative Cole's point. A scrap metal dealer cited in Washington County isn't competing with a scrap metal dealer from Roseau County, more than likely. They're competing with a scrap metal dealer in St. Croix County. And you talked about regulating what we can. This legislature frequently looks for uniform laws on a nationwide basis. We do it in tax law all the time, precisely because we recognize how unfair we can be if we impose a particular regulatory scheme on Minnesota businesses that Iowa businesses or Wisconsin businesses are entitled to. And I have a fear that this bill, with us acting on our own, will do precisely what you said this bill would not do. It will create an unequal playing field. Seems to me the majority of this type of commerce takes place in a regional market that competes, for example, with Wisconsin. So I'm a little bit confused. I'm not convinced that regulating our small scrap metal dealers in rural Minnesota, for example, gets at the competitiveness issue when we're doing nothing with respect to Wisconsin. And, of course, we can't do anything with respect to Wisconsin except convene perhaps a uniform laws type of body to at least look at a regional solution.
I think that was a Rukavina-style question.
He's been rubbing off on you.
I think that was
Mr. Mr. Chair, Council Member, or Committee Member, I'm not sure what the question was in there, but I heard you loud and clear, all right? I agree that this is a bigger than just Minnesota issue. To that extent, our research of laws around the country, I don't think you can find a more talked about and worked on concern in public safety than the scrap metal issue around the country. It is huge all over. And it is because of the public safety issue that it brings. We've had at least four people electrocuted stealing live power lines in this country. It is, in fact, capable of jeopardizing the grid. So, of course, we want to have big regulation overviews to this. But in answer to your question, I know that North Dakota is currently looking at some legislation. I know Wisconsin has had it on its agenda. And in terms of sharing information or sharing the concerns, I have to tell you that my primary concern is public safety. My secondary concern is a level playing field. And I think if public safety can be addressed, the other one will come there because it'll be addressed evenly all the way around. Representative Holford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I assume, from what I understand, we have two bills and two deletos in front of us at this point, and I think that's kind of unusual. I'm assuming that we're going to adopt the delete-alls, and that's what we're supposed to be working from at this point.
Yes, we've already did the delete all adoption. And
I don't think we voted on anything.
Oh,
I think you moved to bill, to delete all amendments, so we've got four documents in front of the committee at this time, and I don't know that I've ever been in a committee where that's been the case.
It was, well, I've been in various committees over the time when we've done it that way for purpose of this.
But I'm going to assume that we're working off his delete all amendment. I have a number of questions for Mr. Havenstein on the automated pawn system. Can you tell me what the monthly and per transaction costs are to participate in the system?
Yes. Mr. Chair, it was Councilmember Holdren. There are two types of users of the automated pawn system. The first is a query-only user. That's an agency that does not have a reporting store or a reporting scrap metal yard, whatever it may be. That fee is based upon the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension's ranking of departments based upon their sworn size, population, etc. The monthly fee ranges from $36 to $72. The majority of them are in the $36 range. The second type of user is a contributing jurisdiction. The contributing jurisdiction has no monthly fee, but in fact a $1 per billable transaction fee. And a billable transaction is the transaction in which the receipt of product is reported to APS. Any subsequent transactions, extensions, renewals, redemptions, things like that are not billable. It's just that initial process. That dollar is then included in the local jurisdiction's fee that they set by council resolution to include the cost of regulation above and beyond the transaction. And in Minneapolis, it's $1.50. In some cities, it's $2. There are some that have a $3 fee. We are very aware of the fact that fees have to reflect costs, and I constantly preach that to everyone who comes on board APS, and I continue to preach it today. And when you realize the cost of regulation and you can break even on it, it's a reasonable approach to use fee transactions rather than annual license fees. And the point I make there is that the annual license fees, we have pawn shops that do 15,000 transactions. We have some that do 30,000 transactions. We have some that do less than 1,000. So how would you have an equitable license fee if it wasn't based upon actual work?
And just for clarification purposes, the $1.50 up to the $3, that's on top of the transaction fee.
That's including the transaction.
So it'd be $50 to $2 per transaction fee. And is that per item or per day? I mean, if you're a pawn shop that uploads once a day, is it per item or per upload?
Neither. It is actually per transaction, and a transaction can have one, it could have 50 items in it. Doesn't make any
sense. So it's per individual customer, in other words.
Yeah.
Then. And then, have you not been sued as far as your fees, and if so, what was the result of that?
Mr. Chair, the automated pawn system has never been sued. The city of St. Paul was sued for its fees. I know that's been resolved, but I don't know the exact outcome of it. Perhaps St. Paul can address that, but it wasn't to Minneapolis and it wasn't APS.
But was it not a portion of it, the APS? It was somebody that was using APS in City of St. Paul and the combination of the fees?
That lawsuit arose out of an increase from $1.50 to $3 per transaction that St. Paul imposed. And as I recall, and again, I'm getting beyond my professional knowledge here, but as I recall, it was as much based on the fact that there was improper notification of it as well as the
cost. Because I think your term about it, that it can be revenue neutral. I think some of these municipalities charge thousands of dollars for the licensure of these organizations rather than the per transaction model as well. So I'm not sure that... I mean, I'm just wondering how much copper and whatever you have to recycle to recoup all these additional costs associated with this. And then you also stated about information being shared with Western Wisconsin. Are you transmitting data on Minnesota residents to Wisconsin, and if so, with what authority?
Mr. Heverstein?
The Information from pawn shops is all data private by state statute. All transaction information about people is all data private, available only for law enforcement purposes. That information is available in APS for law enforcement officials in Wisconsin as well as in Minnesota. The information from the Wisconsin pawn shops that report through APS by their state law is all data private, whether it be product information or people information. And we parse that information accordingly. The transmission of that information is strictly to law enforcement through user password and security protections. And in fact, the automated pawn system is housed at the state of Minnesota and travels under the over the criminal justice data network.
Okay, so just for clarifying purposes, then you are requiring those entities in Wisconsin that you're contracted with to follow Chapter 13 standards as they receive the data in Wisconsin.
Exactly.
Mr. Haberstein?
Yes.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Representative Emmer?
Thank you.
This is for the author, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gardner, your background is in the recycling business, you said. Could you elaborate? What do you mean? What did you do? What's your experience?
Representative, certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative, I was the Executive Director for the Recycling Association of Minnesota, which focused mostly on what we call municipal recycling of cans, bottles, papers, and the like. Not specifically scrap metal recycling, but we had interaction among the groups. I gave a talk at one of their annual meetings. Several of scrap recyclers in the Twin Cities area were members of the organization I worked for. So, yes, to answer your question.
Hey, it does. Mr. Chairman?
Representative.
Thank you. Representative Gardner, because I don't have that experience, and I'm guessing, and based on what you said, I think my guess is probably pretty close to accurate, that recycling is separate in most respects from scrap metal dealers that you're referring to in this legislation. Is that fair understanding on my part?
Representative Emmer, municipal recyclers deal with most residential and commercial recycling of a household and office nature. Scrap recycling tends to involve industrial kinds of scrap, old vehicles that are chopped up, which often go to, because it's Gerdau Ameristeel now, in the Southeast Metro, where they're actually made into rebar, but the fluids and so on are drained out of there. So we're not talking about putting requirements on people who put stuff on their curb, for example, or go to a recycling drop-off to take their cans, bottles, and paper. The number of scrap recyclers is somewhat finite, and you must go there to be able to get any revenue from the scrap metal.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, because that is leading to where I'm going. How many scrap dealers do we have in the state of Minnesota, Representative Gardner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, there are some folks from the Institute for Scrap Recycling Industries in the audience. I want to make sure they get a chance to testify, but it's in the hundreds, several hundred throughout the state.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, do we license them already? Does the state license these dealers?
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I have talked to someone at the BCA who says that quote-unquote salvage yards have information on file with the Pollution Control Agency, mostly as it deals with environmental protection.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Emmer.
Representative Gardner.
Dealing with hazardous waste, excuse me.
Representative Gardner. Because now you opened up, and I apologize, Mr. Chairman, there's a series of questions that I have, because I think these areas kind of intermingle in terms of recycling, scrap metal, which I would commonly refer to as a salvage yard. And I guess with that statement, Representative Gardner, are they one and the same, salvage yards and scrap metal dealers that you're identifying?
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I don't have the citation for the in statute in front of my head for what constitutes a salvage yard, but they would be, in my mind, one and the same, although, it would be some overlap, let's put it that way. Salvage can mean many different things. And we're focusing strictly on metal, so I'm not trying to get into fabric recyclers, for example, like Vertex and St. Paul.
Representative Gardner, then the question I have, because I have several salvage dealers in my my district, and I've worked for some like Bowerly Brothers. Have you had a fiscal note done on this, or have you done any type of research as to how much the cost is going to be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, we have put in a request for a fiscal note so that we can figure out what that would be, and we're trying to have a commensurate tax credit for the business taxes for those businesses so that they can take advantage of that. And I actually have been waiting for some comments back from these scrapyards, and there's one recycling colleague who's here, but I have not gotten that feedback yet. I've been waiting for it, but everybody else has been talking to me except them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, I thought you said that this was one of the things that you had talked about on public radio weeks ago is something that is important to you in bringing. So I would have expected that because of your experience, you would have been working with some of these salvage yards in trying to put together this legislation. And the question I have for you, sir, is this, and no offense to the testifiers, because I can see that they have some very strong feelings and some life experience in the area, but the problem I'm having, and I look at your delete all amendment, I look under subdivision 9 definitions D, and it talks about scrap metal dealer or dealer. It means a person engaged in the business of buying and selling scrap metal that does not include a person engaged exclusively, which I think is an important word, in the business of buying or selling motor vehicles. It doesn't include recycling outfits. It doesn't necessarily. And I'm just wondering, Representative Gardner, if this the way this is drafted, if it doesn't tend to put many of our salvage yards out of business in the state of Minnesota, at the expense of good businesses and jobs that are ongoing. Have you given any consideration to the number of folks you put out of business by putting something like this in place?
Representative Gardner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emery, yes, I have put some thought to that, which is why I say I regretfully suggest some of these rules. I will say that the junkyard of old has passed its time. The scrap recycling businesses that are thriving and that are doing the job well are the ones that I've observed have been in families for more than a century. They have followed some of the best practices suggested by the Institute for Scrap Recycling Industries. I think where I have had doubts and perhaps thoughts in what you're talking about have been in facilities that I would not exactly call modern scrap recycling businesses. And I have worked with counties who have cleaned up problem properties and people who have, you know, 40 cars parked in the front yard. I'm not suggesting that was the case in what you're talking about. But I'm waiting to hear back from them. I talked to 2 weeks before I introduced the bill with the lobbyist for this industry and was waiting to get feedback, and I haven't heard anything. And I've had people from law enforcement, utilities, and others contact me on a daily basis to get details. So if you know of people who would know what the impact of this would be, I would love to hear from them so that we can make a balanced decision as this bill goes through committees.
At this point, I'm going to have to use the discretion of the chair to open it up to other people that might want to testify. I know there's some people I see. I believe there's at least 3 others. I see the high-ranking official from Excel. I don't know if you wanted to testify. Mindy Isaacs wanted to testify. And
Mr. Chair, in the interest of fairness, could we have Ms. Isaacs go first? She would be able to point out some issues with the bill, and I think that would be important rather than reinforcing what we may have already heard.
That would be Ms. Isaacs.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Mindy Isaacs, and I am here on behalf of the local chapter of the Institute of Scrap Metal Recyclers, or Scrap Recycling Industries. Its acronym is ISRI. And I'm also here to represent a consortium of local, of metro area metal recyclers. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to the committee. Our industry understands the problem, and the firms that we represent in this, in the recycling industry, strongly agree that the knowing purchase, processing, and sale of materials that have been stolen will not be tolerated. Metal recyclers are often victims of metal thievery. We're very large victims, actually. Our industry is fully committed to working with law enforcement agencies and affected parties to reduce the unintentional purchase, processing, and sale of stolen materials. Our local group has started a program, and I think you all might have gotten a card that we had passed out, and we post these signs that say the same thing as the card, and it's a uniform acceptance policy. So all of our customers are on notice when they walk in that we're requiring IDs, photo IDs, and that the signature must match the ID, and that we reserve the right to decline purchasing suspicious material, and we have a list here of what we consider suspicious material, such as spools of wire. We also know, we try and stay on top of what's been reported stolen, and in working with law enforcement agencies, we hope that they will notify us. And customers of ours, industrial customers, will notify us that material's been stolen, and they'll send faxes, and we will watch out for that material, and we will not accept it, we will hold it, we will call the authorities, we will do whatever we can on our end. I'll just leave this. We can support the idea of registration and of metal recyclers, and yes, we are already somewhat registered. We are locally registered as salvage dealers, and we are, most of us who deal with things like appliances will be registered with the MPCA. And so we do support the idea of registration, and we hope that by doing so that we can perhaps be provided with a statewide central website that would push information on stolen items and arrest the people who are, you know, frequently selling stolen metal. So we think that it's kind of a two-way street with the law enforcement agencies and the state, that if we can get better information, we can help on our end. And like I said, most of us in the metro area are already taking photo IDs and vehicle information if we are able to see the vehicle. And as was pointed out, it's, they don't always come in a vehicle, and they don't always bring it onto the yard. So having video cameras doesn't necessarily mean we're going to capture that vehicle or that bike or that push cart. So that there's some problems inherent in the videotaping of it, the cameras. In addition, most of us keep a list internally of people we will not buy from. So if we know somebody's been arrested, or if we have caught them trying to sell us stolen material, we have their ID, we have their picture, and we have a do not buy. So when we get an ID, we will look at that ID and go into our database, and if there's a flag on it that says don't buy, we don't buy from them. And we generally, I think there's some privacy issues, so we can't really alert all the other yards. We would like to see a way that we can centralize our information, our different databases. Um, We also, as I said, alert the authorities if we do see some suspect material or if there's material that matches the facts or an email that we've already received. We do not buy material if there's a possibility that it has been stolen. Again, the spool of wires. If a spool of wire comes in on a pickup truck, we will ask for additional proof of where's their authority to be selling it, where'd they get it. If they say they got it from Xcel Energy, we'll call somebody at Xcel Energy and say, we have this person here. Are they authorized to sell your material? And one of the main issues, the biggest issues that we're confronted with is that metal comes in that is really generic. And so we may not know if it is stolen. So if they do chop up that wire, it's not branded. It doesn't have a serial number. It doesn't say Xcel or CenterPoint Energy. Or if a pipe is coming, if pipes are coming from a stolen house or from an abandoned house, we have no way of knowing that that's where that comes from. You know, most of us have customers that are plumbers or electricians, so they'll collect a pickup truck full of copper wire or copper tubing and bring it into us. And, you know, they're our regular customers, so we know them. I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about the difference between pawnbrokers and metal recyclers. Many of the items accepted by pawnbrokers are small and readily identifiable. In contrast, again, most of the metal brought to a scrapyard is not marked or identifiable and can be quite bulky. Another difference is that a scrap processor is the first link in a large manufacturing chain providing raw material to a manufacturer for the creation of a finished product. This chain begins and ends with the scrap processor and encourages recycling and responsible environmental management and a reduction of material destined to our community's already overburdened landfills. A scrap processor has invested thousands, if not millions of dollars in equipment that sorts, shreds, shears, chops scrap material in an effort to prepare the material for a sale to the manufacturer. A pawnbroker does not have this intensive capital investment in equipment and can operate out of a storefront. Laws that require scrap processors to notify law enforcement officials of every transaction that they make has not proven to be an effective means of tracking stolen materials. Such notifications would overwhelm and overburden the law enforcement agency that's tasked with keeping track of the notifications. In many cases, this requirement will require the law enforcement agency either to have overtime from their personnel or hire additional staff. Either way, it would impose significant costs to the municipality. In addition, these notification requirements cause the scrap processor to become, in effect, an adjunct to the law enforcement agency. Again, I'm repeating myself, I'm sure, that we do try and notify the law enforcement agencies of any stolen material or suspicious material. Again, we hope that that law enforcement would find a more concise way to communicate with us, with the dealers, to alert us of individuals who have already been arrested for stealing metal. Again, the video requirement, camera requirement, has some problems. Weather, sight lines, reflections, vehicle movements can make the video capture of trucks and cars unreliable. And again, they don't always bring them into the yard. They can be parked on the street, and I don't believe we can put cameras out there. And driver's licenses, I think that's in your bill, requiring driver's license should not be the only method of ID. We, you know, accept passports. There's many other types of photo IDs that we all accept and, you know, require a signature and a matching picture. So another form of ID we believe could be acceptable. And certain items like cans, you know, the Boy Scouts bring us cans. You know, to require them to show up with a photo ID, we do can drives all the time. So it seems unnecessary for us to take IDs for that. the requirement of paying by check, it may be hard since many of our transactions are small and many of them come in rapid succession. So, you know, a $50 transaction, we may have a line of, you know, 12 people waiting to be paid $25 to $50. So we have trouble supporting the check-only provision.
Ms. Isaacs, if you want to hit maybe a couple of real, we're going to vote in about 2 minutes on this because we're going to vote on both bills today before we're finished. So if you want to get a couple of points very quickly.
Okay. All right. Another thing that's really important for us is the tag and hold part of this bill. Is a very tough one for our industry. Our material is bought at a certain price, and that price can change the next day. So if we were to buy, say, I'm making up numbers, so don't bring us your copper today and expect this. I'm not quoting prices. But if we bought copper at $2.80 a pound today and we're expected to hold it and hold it separate in a separate place, and hold all the different transactions separate in separate places, number one, that price could drop to $1.80 in 2 to 5 days. And we've lost a dollar a pound. And second, I think Representative Gardner pointed this out, the storage of material for any length of time is impossible. It's very hard. Our yards are already, we're processing as fast as we can and we're shipping it as fast as we can. Another problem that we see is that once somebody's been arrested for stealing metal, we see them back in our yard 2 days later. Our company has personally turned in the same guy 6 times. And he's climbed our fence and has been stealing material out of our yard. And so we run into a problem with what happens after they get arrested. As far as houses blowing up, we know that is such a serious problem. We would like to encourage the municipalities to allow the gas to be turned off, that the houses be better secured, that abandoned houses be have better security around them, and the same with maybe job sites that construction workers have. You know, the onus seems to be on the metal recyclers, and I think we need to also look at where the other areas are that can help prevent these problems. Thank you for allowing me to address the committee.
Thank you.
Can I say one other thing?
Yes.
We would really love to take the committee on tours of our facility so that you can understand what our process is and how much metal we recycle a day, a year. And that's what we do.
Maybe you'd also want to take the next committee. It goes to Representative Hellstrom's committee on...
All of you. We'd love to.
Okay, we have
and
to vote
bring your
here.
Hands. No.
Mr. Chairman.
You know, I have probably 5 or 6 points on how this bill is written, things that the author stated were going to happen in the bill that aren't reflected in the language of the bill. We have statements in the bill of must be of good moral character or repute. What does that mean? Good moral character might be mine. On 2 occasions, he talked about working with law enforcement. I think his terms were wait for this to play out or going to work for them. He talked about the automated pawn system. In looking at how the bill's written, it doesn't require, it's an option, so they can either hand deliver or mail information to the chair.
We are going to vote on both bills today.
To move out of committee?
Yes, move it to the next.
Mr. Chairman, if this is the way the committee is going to work, I mean, this is a big bill, Mr. Chairman. We're taking on a whole new industry, new regulations. As Representative Holberg pointed out, good moral repute. The businesses to be registered have to not only operate lawfully but fairly. Mr. Chairman, we haven't had a chance to discuss what that means, and so if we're going to vote these bills out, if that's the intention, I mean, I certainly understand that, but before we do that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to make a motion right now that we take House File 19, is that what... House File 457 and lay it on the table, which I don't believe is a debatable motion.
No, it's not a debatable motion.
I ask for a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Okay. There's been a call for a roll call. The clerk will take the roll. Everybody understand it's a motion to lay it on table? Okay.
And Mr. Chairman?
We are going to take the vote now.
Chairman Mallory?
No.
Representative Bigham?
No.
Representative Cornish?
No.
De La Forest?
Aye.
Emmer?
Yes.
Hillstrom?
No.
Holberg?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Kalin?
No.
Coles?
Yes.
Kranz?
Yes.
Lesch?
No.
Lilly?
No.
Olin?
Yes.
Hamer?
No.
Saylor?
No.
Simon?
No.
Smith?
Excused.
And Westrom is excused.
It fails 6-11. So the next motion is the adoption of the amendment 019. All in favor, say aye.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to have a roll call,
please. And are you not going to take any additional amendments, Mr. Chair?
No, we're not. This time we had set this committee.
So is it coming back to this committee at some point in time?
It will go to Representative Pema, which you're also on.
Mr. Chairman, I just can't believe with the criminal and civil issues in this bill that you're going to just send this thing out of here without having any committee discussion. I mean, we're not trying to kill this bill here, but there are some serious structural issues with how this bill is written and what he stated in his testimony that he wants to occur and the words that are on paper that actually mean something. And it's the responsibility of the civil and or crime committee in the past, whatever, I don't know what the name of it is now, to address those issues as a committee. And if it was something minor and little that could technically be fixed before it goes to local government, but for this bill to leave this committee in this shape at this point, I think, is a disservice to the responsibility of the members of this committee to send out bills that are clean, that make sense, and reflect the intent of the author. Whether or not it's a good idea, that's another issue. But when you have words on paper that don't do what the author says he wants
Holger,
to do.
You're debating a motion that just failed, basically. So all in favor of the amendment?
Roll call, Mr. Chair.
To 19, there's been a roll call requested for adoption of the author's amendment, which is, I don't know if that's ever failed.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. What is the vote that we have right now?
The motion is just to adopt the author's amendment, which was the
vote
that
I've never seen. I'll withdraw the roll call. That's fine. I apologize.
Thank you, Representative Pauls. All in favor of adopting the amendment, say aye.
No.
All opposed, say nay.
No.
Now I think you want to roll call on the adoption of the bill.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, Representative.
And what is the motion that's going to which committee?
It goes to local. What is the title? Metro and local government?
Government and Metropolitan Affairs.
Local government and Metropolitan Affairs.
Thank you, and I would like a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Mallory.
Aye.
Representative Bigham.
Aye.
Cornish.
Aye.
De La Forest.
No.
Emmer.
No.
Hillstrom.
Aye.
Holbert.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kalin.
Aye.
Coles.
No.
Kranz.
No.
Lesch.
Aye.
Lilly.
Aye.
Olin.
No.
Hamer.
Aye.
Saylor.
Yes.
Simon.
Yes.
Smith is excused and Westrom is excused.
Uh, the bill passes 11-6, and since there's no more time, the chair is going to lay over his own bill. So
yours is one that's actually written much much real.
If the committee isn't going to argue about it, then we could do it quickly. And
I think we better have some discussion about it, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned about the way this is being handled, and I apologize. I'm not trying to. Representative Gardner might have a very good bill here, and I think, the public safety concerns are real, and I'm not disputing that, but we can't be throwing things out of this committee like this without without hearing some complaining from this side of the aisle, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The committee is adjourned. I was supposed to announce that there's a press conference that is scheduled in this room. It's moved to 400 South after committee. Representative,
before you bang that gavel, are we going to adopt the minutes from the February 1st meeting?
Mr. Chair, can we talk to Ms. Benson about that? I noticed one mistake that...
I do have corrections to the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dula Force, that's why we're not adopting, and we're going to try and straighten them out.
Okay.
So that's why we're not adopting them. It's your bill that we're trying to straighten it out.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay.